Well, this morning I thought we'd start with kind of the direction we've been going the last few weeks, Bible stories from the Old Testament. And so today we've been looking at the Tower of Babel. You know, when you look at the Bible and you read Genesis chapter 1 all the way through, these stories, you know, creation, the flood, Tower of Babel, all of them are like boom, 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 lots of stuff. But there's like generations and years between each story. And so we're going to kind of look at that a little bit, the chapter 10 before chapter 11, which is the Tower of Babel story. Chapter 10 tells us how the nations were divided up. And so it gives us the story of sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The sons of Japheth had seven sons, seven grandsons. Primarily, they were the inhabitants of Europe. And the sons of Ham, four sons, 26 grandsons. Primarily the inhabitants of Africa, sons of Cush, sons of Mizraim, sons of Canaan, all from the Ham line. And then sons of Shem, five sons and 21 grandsons, primarily in the Palestine, Israel, Middle East area. So that's kind of what we see in chapter 10. And then we lead in chapter 11. The story of Babel is really just a short Bible story. There's not a lot there, only about 11 verses there, but kind of a lot to unpack. So hopefully we can look at that a little bit this morning. Hey, Miss Naomi, I see that you're on there. I'm glad you're there. Good to see you this morning. Hope you're doing well. We've been thinking of you. And so good to have everyone on. Kayla's on here. Kayla, let us know how Josh's leg's doing with his procedure he had. Lana's on here. Good to see Lana and Nick and my wife. Good to see everyone this morning. You know, the main character in the story is Nimrod. When I was a little kid, I always heard the name Nimrod. I thought it was such a cool name. So I remember calling people Nimrod as a bad derogatory name. You're just a Nimrod, you know. Nobody gets such a funny name. But anyway, he had a city, and the city was Babylon. Nimrod is a descendant from Ham. And if you look at Nimrod and kind of all the story of Babylon and things like that, you'll see Nimrod and the city foreshadows kind of the Antichrist in his city. Nimrod really means the rebel or the lawless one. And so it's kind of interesting. We have the Antichrist, the lawless one, and Nimrod, the lawless one. They were trying to have one world religion, one world everything. The first United Nations kind of foreshadowing the last of the one world government as the Antichrist will set up. There's a great rebel standing behind the first Babylon, and so there'll be a great rebel person behind the last one, Nimrod, and then the Antichrist. So here in Genesis is man's first attempt to build a society where God would be completely excluded. Up to this point, they had societies and things that would happen, but God was always kind of part of it somehow. So they were literally trying to set up a society without God anywhere in it. In fact, not anything about God was going to be, you know, how God would want you to set up things like that. They're completely shutting God out. But God refuses to be excluded from human life. And I love that, that he refuses to be excluded from my life, and he refuses to be excluded from your life, and he comes and gets involved with us. He is present with us. And I love that. So here he's going to come down, and he's going to see the city and see the tower. And he's going to come and judge them to help them see him. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. So this is the last part of the Old Testament. And it's the last part of the Bible where we kind of talk about mankind as a whole historically. There's some prophetic passages that we see throughout the Bible, but we don't see stories of historical stories of mankind as a whole. After this, we begin seeing a focus on the nation of Israel and then the church in the New Testament. But as mankind as a whole and what's going on with everybody in the whole world, this is the last part of that. And so it is kind of a major kind of milestone in the Bible. Up to this point, everything that was happening was all of mankind, all of mankind. And now after this, it switches to focusing on just a certain group of people. This chapter talks about how they passed from the one family of Noah to 70 different nations after the end of this. So just 11 verses, kind of see how it went from one nation to 70 nations, and then we see all the different divisions. So from one family of Noah and then how it all spread out. So this process covers the space of time from Noah to Abraham. So from Shem to Abraham were 10 generations. And if we use the same rate of increase as the rest of the Bible shows, it would be close to 15 million people on the earth at this point. It's kind of crazy to think about that. So let's look at that real quick. Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 through 9. I said 11 verses. I meant 9 verses. It's chapter 11, the Tower of Babel. Verse number 1. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. As the people journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. They said one to another, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and tar for mortar. We're going to kind of go into that and unpack that a little bit later. But verse number 4 says, and they said, come, let us build us a city and a tower whose top will reach to heaven, and let us make a name for ourselves, otherwise we'll be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the sons of man built. I want to take some notes out too, but I'll wait until after we finish reading. Verse number 6. The Lord said, the people are one and they have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. Now nothing that they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language so they may not understand one another's speech. Verse number 8. So the Lord scattered them abroad from over the face of the earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore, the name of it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. From there, the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. You know, the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And after Nimrod and his people settled, they said to another, we're so handy, let us make our own bricks and build bricks with mud and kind of bake them. And we're going to build us a city with our bricks. And we're going to have a wonderful city with our bricks and our own tar and mortar and slime, as what they would call in some versions. And then we're going to build a tower. And since we're so good at this brick-making business, so good at making your own slime or tar or mortar, let's build this tower so big that we're going to reach heaven. Now, I'm not sure if he was talking about reaching heaven like we're God is, or just reach the heavens like way up in the sky. Don't really know, but the idea was that they were going to try to reach as high as they could to say, we're going to basically do it on our own. And since we're so good at building things or building a city and building a gate and building a tower, let's give ourselves a name so we can stay together and become mighty. Well, obviously, God didn't like that. And I don't think it had anything to do with building a tall tower. I mean, we have tall towers here. Go over to India and Mumbai, they have this giant tower. I think it's one of the largest towers in the world. You know, he knew that they couldn't make it high enough to get to the, to heaven, you know. I mean, think about how long it's taken us to make the skyscrapers we have today with the steel and all that stuff. So, you know, how high would it have been with brick? Maybe as high as the pyramids might be right now. Maybe that's as high as they would make that tower. So God wasn't really concerned that they would make a tower that could reach heaven. You know, he was like, probably laughed at him, like, you know, that's not going to work, right? You know, at some point, the weight of that would just crush the other bricks. And so they wouldn't do that. And it was a nice thought. But so I don't think God was really worried about that. I don't think he had anything to do with them being skilled or wanting to stay together. I don't think God was upset or worried that they were so skillful or that they wanted to stay together in a big nation. I'm not sure if that was really the issue either. I think the issue had everything to do with the pride of man. You know, they replaced God with their own intelligence, and they felt they could control and design their own destiny. You know, they had a plan, but it was a plan without God. And it says, let us build a city. Let us make a name. God is completely left out. It's interesting, in this story, we see the phrase, let us, four different times. Three times are when they would say it. Let us build a city. Let us make a name, right? Three times. One time was God. Let us go down and confound their language. And so God says, well, if you're going to leave me out, I'm going to leave you out of my plan. And that's kind of the way I thought about that. But, you know, they had, you know, brick, and they wanted to make their own bricks. And I think it's interesting. it contrasts so much with the city that they're making, how much we can see the contrast between God and his relationship with mankind. We see the Nimrod in his city and uniting the nations, and we see the Antichrist doing the same thing. But even the material that they used was kind of symbolic that they were leaving God out, because they were making this imitation stone. That's what brick is, imitation rock. And then that's kind of what we see in our modern society, that we have an imitation rock. We're going to kind of make things the way we think they should make. But God says, look, my word is the rock. Jesus Christ is the rock. Sometimes that gets replaced sometimes with man-made religion, man-made words, man-made traditions. And so I think that's kind of the symbolic idea of looking at this. You see this this idea of them making their own bricks, but that's what our churches have done maybe, and our societies have done. They've completely left God out and replaced God and his word and Christ with man-made things that aren't as good. I mean, brick is nice, but it's not as hard as rock. Brick is nice, but it's not as hard as the rock of Jesus Christ. And so, Alan, you make a good point there. Man plans, God laughs. I like that. You're exactly right. Man plans and God laughs. And that's usually the way it is. Because we think, not we, you and I, because we're smarter than that. But we, mankind, think that we can outdo God, do things without God, make our own world. And I think of that story of the scientists getting together and that said that we have everything we can do. We can make our own person. We can make our own world. We can make everything ourselves. We don't need you, God. And God says, okay, go ahead. You make yourself, you know, your own person, whatever. And so they'll get the dirt, you know, they start building, put the dirt together. They go, wait. Get your own dirt. I made that dirt, you know. And it's kind of the arrogance of mankind that we think that we can kind of do things on our own. And God says, if you take the dirt that I have, the tar, the slime that I've created, take all that, and you try to build without me. If it's without me, then all that I created. So you're not really without me. They said, let us build a city. But God's the one who's going to build a city. Remember in Abraham, where he says he's looking for a city made without hands, the holy city of heaven, right? But they wanted their own city, and God says, but I'm building you a city. So again, here's this contrast between man without God, the 666 aspect of mankind, human nature, and man living without God. And then you have God over here going, it's completely contrasting to what I have for you. I have the rock. I have the city. I have everything I need for you if you'll just follow me. So that's kind of the idea, that's kind of comparison contrast to man without God and God. And what happens to that? It's not like it's here's man without God and here's God. God's way up here and man without God is way down here. And we think we have some, you know, special thing. And God said, man, maybe you just need to be humbled a bit. And so I thought about this story, and maybe you can think about it too, being humbled a little bit. You ever like watch kids play and they make Legos and they make little towers? And they kind of, my grandsons do that, and they make these towers and whatever. And one of the other kids would come by and knock it down, and they'll get so angry at it, you know. I remember as a kid building a little army forts, whatever, and brother would come in and knock them down, like, I just got them all set up, you know. And you're having this war battle, and then someone comes along. And I can think about it with God. God could have just looked at that tower and went, boop, and just knocked it over, you know. And they build another one, and he goes, boop, knocked it over, sent a wind, a hurricane, tornado, or something like that. So he could have done that, I guess. He could have, like, rained other things down like he did with Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, all sorts of things God could have done. He wasn't going to send a flood. Remember, he said he wasn't going to do that again. But he said, let's go down there instead of knocking the tower down. Let's humble them a little bit. Let's get them to realize that they're not that important. And not that you're not important, but the idea that you're not, that you can create things all by yourself. So he said, let's go down there and let's confound their language. I mean, that's an interesting way, but maybe God was also using this, the idea, because he knew down the road, the earth would be so big and there'd be people there that he wanted his gospel to spread everywhere. And this is kind of what he was going to use for that to happen. I don't know. God always uses bad things a man does for good purposes. But he said, let's go down there and let's humble, let's change their language a little bit. And then not only are we going to change the language, we're going to scatter them around the world. So he did. And the city that was left, he called Babel, because they just sound like they're just babbling to themselves. They couldn't even understand, right? But he scattered them. Now they have a name, Babel, right? Let us make a name for ourselves. Well, you have a name, right? But until then, until this point, there was one language. But now language is a barrier. And notice it talks about their language and speech. And I think the idea with that was that not only can they not understand each other, but their way they speak was so different. Think about like Chinese and English. You ever look at Chinese alphabet and English alphabet? Completely different. And you try to communicate English to Chinese, there's no way similarity. But if you talk to someone who speaks Spanish and someone who speaks Portuguese and someone who speaks maybe Latin, you may be able to kind of understand some words in there that are different, but they're all derived from Latin. But you think about like Chinese and English, completely separate. And like, there's not even Russian, the way Russian alphabet is, and Chinese. So that's kind of the idea, was that not only their language was confused, but their speech and everything about it was so confused and messed up. So he changes the language and speech, and he scatters them all over the world. One verse I want you to see here, and I thought it was interesting, verse. It's in Genesis chapter 10, verse 25, towards the end of chapter 10. It doesn't have anything to do the story, but it says this. To Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. And I thought about that. Can you imagine being part of a family and living together? You have friends and neighbors around you, and y'all went to work together, and the next day, and I don't know if families were divided up, but definitely friends were divided up, and neighbors were divided up, but the next day you spoke different languages, and he scattered you living across the world from your sons or from your family members, and not knowing it, not even knowing that you could do anything about it. Did they even know that they were that far apart? Like, if you were in America, and you were in Florida, and someone was in Tennessee, but we know Florida and Tennessee, but if you just would just pop there, would you even know that you're that far apart? Because back then they lived like in a small area. So just think about that impact would be spread out all over the world. Did they even know at that moment they would never see their friends again, their coworkers, So now they're all scattered, and you can imagine kind of being in a place where you're scattered and your language is different. And maybe you think in your mind language is the same, or maybe you remember everything. I don't know. Maybe they remembered everything. Like, yesterday I was speaking French, and today I'm speaking Russian, and of course they didn't call it French or Russian, but it's a completely different language, and I can't understand the other person. And he scattered them. How many people were they left there that still couldn't talk, even though they're scattered? So I don't really know that story, and I'd like to know more about it, and kind of how it worked out semantics-wise, you know. But I just started thinking about, man, can you imagine this? Like, you're walking along, and then poof, you're in Africa, and everyone around you is speaking African, and you're like, yesterday I spoke English, and today I'm speaking African. I don't even know English anymore, you know, and how weird that would be. And then to not even know your friends and family, is there a way we can get back together? So before the Tower of Babel story, there was one language, and the earth was really one continent. And I think this is kind of where God said he scattered them. I think this is where God separated the oceans and the seas. Remember the stories back when you looked in the science book? And Atlanta put on here, we're not the center of the universe. That is true. We think we are, but we're not. Right? But you remember science class where they talk about the earth used to be one continent? And they said that it took, that sort of shifting, the tectonic plate sort of shifting. Now with different continents, and they're all sort of moving. And it took millions of years for that to happen. It didn't. It took one day. I think there was one continent. And I think at that moment where God scattered everybody, he also split the whole earth and land, whatever, and he moved everything around. So they couldn't even cross over the ocean. They didn't have boats back then. They didn't have those kind of things. So they didn't even know where to go, right? And so that was his way of scattering everybody. I think that happened. And, and I think about whoever's writing this, in Genesis, the person who's writing this, Moses, we think is writing all this, but God's telling him all the story. And does Moses understand all that happened and understand how we're all divided? Because they're so close in their own little world, did they not at that moment realize how big the earth was? You know, and how crazy that would be, think about. But it's interesting also, whenever science comes up with a new discovery, we think they were all one continent and it separated. It took millions of years. That the Bible's already ahead of the curve on that and already knew what had happened. And the Bible never contradicts science. And so new discoveries of science, you don't go back to the Bible and say, the Bible's wrong because of this. No, the Bible always goes, it already happened. The Bible's the one that said the earth was round before mankind thought it was round. And so I think it's kind of interesting. So God had just destroyed the earth and flood, with the flood, not even 10 generations ago. So think about that, 10 generations, and in generations time, you think about 20, 25 years. That's not a lot. But you think about what America has done, what's happened in America in the last 10 generations, what has happened in our society in the last 10 generations. So you can see it changes can happen very quickly. So mankind, 10 generations ago, God had a flood. One family comes out, and Noah and his descendants, and then now 10 generations later, God's like, okay, I can't flood the earth again, right? And so let's see what we can do here. Confounds them, separates them, all of the world. Again, man just tries to continue to do things without God. And God constantly is just saying, I could just destroy the whole earth and start over. But he doesn't. He allows mankind to continue to do what it's not supposed to do. And he continues to come down to mankind and say, but I'm still here. I'm here for you. I love that. God will never allow us to work our way or build our way or find our own way to heaven. He has set out a plan, and that plan is the only plan. It's the eternal redemptive plan of God. The plan's not going to work through man-made religions. We're not going to go to heaven. The plan's not going to work through the old path that we lay, the bricks that we make ourselves. It's not going to work. Yeah, it's only going to work through faith in Christ alone. And it's only through that process that it will happen. And so I think about that. Mankind continues to do their own way and their own thing. And so what do you think about that as you're listening here? What do you think about the things that we do to kind of kick God out, the things we do to kind of push God aside? I mean, it's kind of sad because we continue to do it. Whether it be inside the church or even at our homes, we continue to do things that are contrary to what God would have us do. So if you're on here this morning and put a kind of thought about that, what are some things that you think we do in our society or in our churches or maybe in our homes that kind of push God out and separate us from that? We're kind of a delay time. That's usually what happens is I'm a few seconds ahead of you, and so I'm waiting for you to respond to me. And so I'm going to wait a second to see if he has a response before I move on. What are some thoughts you have? What do we do now in today's society, again, in our churches, in our homes, in our culture, that we push God out? One of the thoughts I thought of is we push God out of teaching our children. I'm not saying that you have God in the schools, we push God out of our schools, out of just teaching our children. God says, teach my words daily and whatever. And we've kind of resorted to like Sunday morning, Wednesday night meetings. And we're not teaching our children about God and using God as an education tool for our children. So, let's see. Atlanta says, we have to use his recipe or go south quick. That's exactly right. Cindy says, sometimes we just don't want to put God in the equation. Until it goes wrong, and that's exactly right. All of a sudden it's wrong, and they're like, oh, God, please fix it. Help me out here, right? And he's like, well, you made such a mess of it. Let's see what I can do to fix it, right? Ellen, we tell ourselves we're so busy. Oh, that is so true. We just get busy in life, and sometimes, and I've had to do this recently, is just kind of stop being busy for a little bit and kind of stop and rest and stop and meditate on God's Word. Because our lives can get so busy personally. If we let it, and we just kind of go about business without even thinking, oh yeah, God, come back here and catch up with me. And it's kind of sad we do that. All right, guys. I appreciate you all coming on this morning and kind of interacting a little bit this morning. Hope you're having a great day. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, Sunday morning, come back and join us. Let me pray with you as we close.